We are in our summer sermon series called BIOS, Stories That Shape Us. And I'm so excited to be up here with Virginia Minder today. You may have seen Virginia helping with the Food Pantry Plus or at Destination Sabbath School playing the piano. Or perhaps you've seen her and her dear husband Wally. Would you raise your hand for a minute, sitting right there in the front row on the parking lot side? And you've noticed, Virginia, you have a lot of poise, and you have a lot of, I would call it, put-togetherness, for lack of a better word. And because of that, some might think that your life has been easy.
Yeah.
But that is not the case. Yeah. The word you used with me in describing it is survival.
Yes.
And you have a powerful story. We're so grateful that you're sharing it with us today. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Ray Wynn. After that introduction, maybe I should just sit down. In the past, my relationship with the Lord wasn't always characterized by boldness, but threads of struggle shaped my joys, sorrows, and at times my wavering faith. This is my story. I was born on June 23, 1947. In the town of Maywood, California, a small hamlet outside Los Angeles, to a father that hailed from Puerto Rico and a mother from El Paso, Texas. My father trained at various army bases, preparing for an attack on Japan. But with the dropping of the atomic bomb, that plan was scrubbed. My mother was one of the Rosie the Riveters and worked at Consolidated Aircraft in San Diego, assembling the turrets on the B-24 bombers. They met there and married in 1945. But all was not normal in this baby's arrival, since I was born with a right club foot that was casted at 2 weeks of age and changed weekly until the age of 12. Intermittent bouts of special shoes mixed in with a total of 6 surgeries did not produce much corrective results, and in fact worsened with the diagnosis of polio in 1951. My maternal widowed grandmother, who lived with us for several years, spoke only Spanish. So I learned 2 languages simultaneously in the home, since my parents insisted on conversing in English. She became my city of refuge in times of trouble, when my untreated bipolar mother would throw objects like utensils, pot lids, and anything handy through the air in fits of rage, and usually followed by a thump on the head for added measure. This behavior manifested its ugly head for years. Adventist neighbors invited my parents to church, and they subsequently were baptized and became what is known as legalistic and ultra-conservative Adventists. Overnight, the crisp bacon for breakfast, the beef soup, and other meat dishes I was accustomed to eating disappeared from the table and replaced by other non-meat foods. I didn't miss the former ones, since all a 6-year-old cared about was I was fed. Thankfully, my grandmother was an awesome cook and mastered how to make tamales and other Mexican foods with veggie burger. I never went hungry. She also became an Adventist, even though she enjoyed her 1/2 cigarette every evening while watching championship wrestling. I was put into church school at San Gabriel Academy in the elementary years, and my parents then moved to La Sierra in 1961 so I could graduate from La Sierra Academy. I continued to experience persistent teasing from other children and learned to suck it up when dealing with daily chronic pain and difficulty in walking. My graduation in 1968 from nursing school opened new doors for me. I met a non-Christian man that I thought my parents would dislike. And because his family home was over 2,000 miles from mine, we married in 1968 and moved to the tiny town of Abingdon, Virginia, where he became a deputy sheriff. But he crossed the line into the dark side and became a criminal, resulting in the loss of his job. He left town in disgrace with one of the county prostitutes, abandoning me and our 9-year-old son and 6-year-old daughter. We were left with a dime and a penny in funds, which obviously would not meet our needs in groceries and other necessities. As I hit rock bottom, I recall the God that my grandmother loved. 2 days later, upon returning home from work, a letter arrived that included a check describing that I had overpaid on a loan years ago, and the overpayment was attached. Still, our struggles continued, now as a single parent. One night, in the deepest of despair, I had a dream of a man's voice that told me to read Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through him who gives me strength, which led me to Hebrews 4:16, come boldly before the throne of grace. That verse set the foundation of my practice of conversing with Jesus daily in what might be called irreverent. It might go something like this. Hello, Jesus. I'm back. Have another situation that I need your help in. I can't do this alone, and I don't know the solution, but I'm depending on you to give me the answer. No flowery words or speeches, just right to the core of the problem. Openly and freely expressing my anguish, my needs, my wants, knowing that he would never, never double-cross me. Sometimes I would shake my fist in the air when super stressed and I'd scream at him. But what is irreverent is insisting on going it alone without his help. Not that we can come to him broken and in need of extensive repair. My music has been such a solace in times of distress and happiness as well. And when I sit at my baby grand and play, I feel the peace that flows over my soul, knowing that one day I will see my benefactor face to face and say, thank you for making me whole in my new body and giving me the strength to never give in, like Winston Churchill's speech during the London Blitz. I had to sell my home in Virginia so we could move to California. And that prayer request resulted in the house selling in 3 days, when sales were very slow in that area at that time. My car developed an alternator problem and was inoperative. Again, I gave the problem to the Lord, and a mechanic neighbor that was near us offered to fix it for me, telling me that he'd stored this particular piece in the corner of his garage for over a year and didn't know what to do with it. It fit into my car perfectly. Upon returning back to California, we lived in an apartment for 4 years while I worked for a down payment on the house I was finally able to purchase. To say the least, this was an extremely humbling experience, coming from a home and downsizing into a low-income subsidized apartment. But the Lord's responses came wrapped in so many different packages. I was able to keep a full-time job as an emergency room nurse at the Loma Linda University Medical Center, a part-time flight nurse position working in a helicopter, and reading medical files for attorneys prior to trial. Times were hard, but I kept going because I kept asking for strength and direction and his tolerance of my unorthodox ways of talking to him. 20 years went by, seeing my son graduate from La Sierra University with a degree in business and my daughter from LVN school. I was tired in body and soul and asked the Lord to provide a nice husband. So it was, "I'm back. We need to talk. I want a Christian man that will sit with me every week in church and loves you." Since I really messed up the first time and will not repeat that situation again, I want you to make the choice for me and put him on the front porch. Months went by without not even a whisper that he was working on my request. Of course, I thought my problem should produce immediate results, and he made me wait until I reached the point where I said, "Okay, have it your way. I'm not asking again." And I turned around and began remodeling my home. I had been the organist for the Norco Church for 8 years and decided to attend Destination Sabbath School at La Sierra Church, where I became involved in scheduling Sabbath School programs. Then God answered with remarkable results in November 2000. I saw Wally, a widower in Destination Sabbath School, a twin brother of my academy biology teacher. One Sabbath in our Destination Sabbath School potluck, during conversations surrounding the fruits growing in our yards, he mentioned that he had a persimmon tree, and he asked me if I liked them. When I said yes, he brought several bags of the fruit and placed them on, you guessed it, my front porch. I remembered my prayer to the Lord about the front porch and was awed, to say the least. The next month, while decorating the Christmas tree for Destination Sabbath School in the fellowship hall, I mustered up the courage and gave him a card inviting him to join me for the candlelight concert at the church the following Friday. He took the note with him and phoned me and accepted in 10 minutes. On the condition I attend a program with him in Palm Springs the day prior to my invitation. I invited him over for a home-cooked meal just before Christmas, and our relationship grew. We married on June 24, 2001, in the backyard of my nursing school roommate in Irvine, and this past June celebrated our 24th wedding anniversary. Looking forward to our 25th. To say that I am grateful to a loving Savior for answering my prayers in so many ways is an understatement. Without him, I am nothing, and with him, I am everything. Hebrews 4:16 is my go-to verse every time. We've had years filled with travel, making new friends and learning about each other and enjoying family in our La Sierra Church community. One of my favorite music pieces is by the Collinsworth family, titled "It Matters to the Master." And it's comforting as a familiar melody that wraps around your heart. Listen carefully to the words, which will be on the screen. When life lets you down and you feel more broken than whole, when the wounds go deeper than words and you can't tell a soul, I may not know what you're going through, may not make that high mountain move, but one thing I found that I really want you to know, If it matters to you, it matters to the Master. He wants to share the burdens you bear, whisper peace when your world gets shattered. If it's your greatest joy or your deepest pain, or you're really needing an answer, if it matters to you, it matters to the Master. Friend, do you think the Maker and Giver of life is far too busy to care about your trouble and strife? He sees the sparrow that falls to the ground, and he hears the tears that don't make a sound. If you only knew how precious you are in his sight. If it matters to you, it matters to the Master. He wants to share the burdens you bear, whisper peace with your world when your world gets shattered. If it's your greatest joy or your deepest pain, or you're really needing an answer, if it matters to you, it matters to the Master. If it's your greatest joy or your deepest pain, or you're really needing an answer, if it matters to you, it doesn't only matter to you. If it matters to you, it matters to the Master. As we've gathered in this sacred place, let us find echoes of your own stories through this series and your own redemption. Happy Sabbath.
Thank you so much, Virginia. We've been having issues at our house lately. Issues with spitting. Now, for those of you who don't know, I have a 2, a 4, and an almost 6-year-old. And the issue really is a parental issue. The kids are having a grand time spitting at each other. They think it's hilarious. They just discovered how to spit. And my lecture goes something like this. Stop spitting. Spitting is unsanitary. I'm not sure if they know that word, but so much for trying to keep the germs, you know, contained in the family, not spread all over. Spitting is unsanitary, and it's also disrespectful. You all don't quite understand this right now, but it's not, it should not be done. We do not allow spitting in this family. And then we were brushing teeth, and my almost 6-year-old says, "We don't allow spitting in this family, Mama." And then they were chewing gum, and I say, "Spit it out and put it in the trash." And guess what she says? She has a point. We want our kids to learn to spit it out, do we not? Virginia's favorite word in that text that she shared, Hebrews chapter 4, verse 16, is boldly or with boldness. And I just realized I did not read the passage. Is that correct? Yes, I did not. Hebrews 4, I'm going to read it for you right now, if we could show it on the screen. Hebrews 4. It says, "Since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast to our confession, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who in every respect has been tested as we are, yet without sin." And this is her favorite text, the next one, verse 16. "Let us therefore approach the throne of grace with boldness, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need." So Virginia's favorite word is boldly or with boldness. And several times as we were sharing, she said what she learned to do with Jesus is to just spit it out. So I went and looked at this word with boldness, And the word here, it can be translated different ways. In the New Testament, it's translated openly, freely, frankly, bluntly, plainly. And it's literally made up of two Greek words. The word with boldness or boldly is paresia, paresia. And it's from para, which means all, and reo, flowing out. In other words, let it all out, spit it out, all flowing out. It says, approach the throne with all flowing out. That's what it means, literally. Now, many times what comes out of our mouth is not always pleasant. It's not always easy to deal with. But the one writing to the Hebrews, to these Jewish Christians, encourages all of us to just spit it out. Hebrews is written to people that are facing public insults. They're facing having their possessions seized. They're facing prison time because they follow Jesus. And they're starting to wonder to themselves, is this really worth it? Shouldn't we go back to our Judaism, the Judaism that's understood and accepted by the Roman Empire? Wouldn't it be better for us just to remember Moses and the Torah and the covenant, and let's stick with Judaism and forget this Jesus bit? But the writer of Hebrews says again and again and again, Jesus is better. Don't give up on Jesus. Jesus is better than the Torah, better than Moses, better than the priests, better than the sacrificial system, better than the covenant. Again and again, Jesus is better. Therefore, stick with Jesus no matter what you're going through. That's the book of Hebrews. And so in these few verses in Hebrews, the author implies what Jesus might say to us. Those of us who are struggling, going through hard times, what would Jesus say to us? Number one, Jesus would say to us, I get it. I get it. In Hebrews 4:14 and 15, it says, we don't have a high priest that can't sympathize with our weaknesses. We have someone who has been tested as we are, gone through it. Jesus can empathize with our struggles because he's been through it. Dealing with being double-crossed, like Virginia did, by someone you trust, Jesus says, I know what it feels like to be betrayed with a kiss. Dealing with finances, Jesus says, I had nowhere to lay my head. Dealing with pressure to let go of your convictions to get ahead, Jesus says, I was promised the world if I would just bow down. Dealing with a scary diagnosis, Jesus says, I know what it's like to feel your life slipping away, and I'm with you to the end of the age. I get it. Jesus would say to us, not only I get it, but then boldly, freely, openly, let it all flow and just spit it out to me. You can spit it out. Don't be afraid to say it. Two other places in Scripture where this word boldly or letting it flow out is used, the opposite of doing that is being ashamed. If you missed last week's bios with Dr. David Kendall and Pastor Devo, please go back and listen. It was powerful. And Pastor Devo quoted Brené Brown, who said that when you douse shame with empathy, it can't survive. And when we remember that Jesus gets it, that he's been there, that he understands that, then we don't have to feel shame to letting it all out with Jesus, to spitting it out with him. In a book by Kai Strobel, Where Prayer Becomes Real, How Honesty with God Transforms Your Soul, there's this quote. It says, prayer is not a place to be good, it's a place to be honest. Prayer is not a place to perform, it's a place to be present. Prayer is not a place to be right, it's a place to be known. Prayer is not a place to prove your worth, it is a place to receive worth and offer yourself in truth. And I have to thank Darren for sharing that quote with me this week. Or from Ellen White in her book, Steps to Christ, prayer is the opening of the heart to God as to a friend. Boldly, we can come to the throne of grace. Too often, instead of opening up, we think we have to, as Virginia said, suck it up. Wiktionary.org lists synonyms of suck it up as, quote, grin and bear it, or deal with it, or take it like a man. For too long, this has been our definition of toughness. I recently read the book Do Hard Things by Steve Magnus. He's coached Olympic athletes, and he talks about how we get toughness and resiliency wrong and what real toughness looks like from a scientific perspective and a practical one. He argues that true resilience comes from ditching the facade, embracing reality, and learning to listen to our bodies and respond to them appropriately, not sucking it up, but spitting it out. Jesus says, I get it, you can spit it out, and you're safe with me. You're safe with me. Hebrews promises that when we spit it out, we'll receive mercy and find grace. Aren't we all in need of a little mercy and a little grace? Yes, we need other things too. And sometimes we get those things. Sometimes our house sells in 3 days. Sometimes the check is in the mail. Sometimes the auto part is just in the corner of the neighbor's garage. Or God plops our future husband on our front porch. Anybody else want Virginia to pray that prayer for them? Sometimes that's how God answers us. But as Virginia shared today, the Lord's responses came wrapped in so many different packages. Sometimes you learn to live with the limp and you find solace at your grandmother's house. Sometimes you're living in that low-income subsidized apartment and you just have enough strength to work the 3 jobs to put food on the table for your kids. Sometimes you find mercy and grace in the middle of the storm. The author of Hebrews says that this mercy and grace will help us. The Greek word here for help, it's a nautical word. It's from shipping. It refers to a rope or a chain that's used for frapping a boat. Big sailboats, the big Roman merchant ships, like what Paul sailed in and got shipwrecked. That same word is only used in that shipwreck story. They frapped the boat. They wrapped it around with rope and chains to try to hold it together in the storm. And the author of Hebrews says, guess what? You're going to find mercy and grace to hold you together in the storm. It's when we know this God, the God that holds us safe in the storm, that we too can then be the safe people for the people around us, for our kids, for our colleagues, for our neighbors, for our friends, that we can say to others, that we can be a space that says to others, I get it. I've been there. I get it. You can spit it out with me. You're safe with me. As we follow this Jesus, may we be those people that others can find refuge in as well. Amen.